you are the only one living in your body. So you're the only one that knows what's true for you. What I'm trying to help you do is understand what's your normal. Because so often we go to the doctor and they'll say, that's normal. Like, don't worry about it. But that's not normal for you. And that's really all they should care about.
We're going. Wow, that was a lot. I was kind of panicky. I'm sorry, but we did it. We're recording.
You were panicking and I was like, oh my God.
Well, I'm like, girl, we got 20 minutes to go. Yeah, we have a middle of the day recording. So it's kind of like a little hectic here. Mid work day. We're just like, hey, we took an hour off work. Here we are.
We're literally, yep. This was the time that worked. So we made it work because we wanted Dr. Jolene Brightman on the podcast. So we did what we did.
I keep saying.
We did what we could.
I keep saying Dr. Jolene. I need to say Dr. Brighton, but I just love her first name because we keep singing Jolene.
I want Miley Cyrus to come on the podcast, by the way.
Oh my God. Well, same.
That's peaking for me.
Yeah.
Also, I've been having this really bad habit, especially today when I was teaching. I'm like, every time I like talk, I'm gleeking. Like I'm like, three, like every time I spoke, I was like, you guys just put your effort in it. And it was just like spit spewing out of my mouth. And I'm like, I'm so sorry if you're in like a chest press and I just spit all over you.
I have this habit where I'll like accidentally say something wrong or have like a lisp when I say something. But since the way I coach is down to the second, I don't have time to like go back and fix it. So I'm like, thread, or like I'll say something like this and then I just keep going. I'm like, shit.
I do that all the time, but I don't like, honestly, sometimes if I mess up like three times in a row, I'm like, okay. Like, and then people know I'm correcting myself, but honestly, I leave it to, I'm like, I don't care enough. Yeah, I really don't. I don't care.
Sid, I just noticed your eyebrows. They look bomb.
Thank you. I got my eyebrows done. They looked a little intense at Lifetime yesterday.
I was like, oopsies, because I didn't have makeup on. So it just looked really like, holy crap. She got her eyebrows done. Mm-hmm. And I could see people like come up and say hi. And then they just look at them and I'm like, oh my God. But they look so fire now.
They're like bomb. Okay. How are you today? Otherwise, I feel like we haven't had time to chat.
I'm like a little tired.
Should we take a breath? Like I'm feeling a little.
Yeah.
We are both feeling a little. I don't know.
Just kidding.
Let's take a breath. Don't ever do that again. You guys, she literally just put the mic down her throat.
I did not. That it was barely pretty tickled impressive. My thing in the back. No,
that
I'm
was
kidding.
Impressive. No gag. Wait, what's the part of the song? Little dangly thing and swinging the back of my throat.
Oh, who is that? Not Nicki Minaj.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Right? That's what I said.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's hot in here, by the way. Ooh, hot and dangerous.
Hot? Isn't it Cardi B?
Cardi B, yeah. Oh. It's Cardi B.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I can't believe I said Nicki.
Okay, let's go into Straight Candid Moments because you know what? It's time.
It's time.
And I want to be freaking ready for Jolene to get on here because I'm so hyped up.
Same. Okay. You go. I'll go first this time.
Okay. You go.
So Straight Candid Moment, if you don't know what Straight Candid Moment is, moment where you feel humbled, more human, something funny that happened, or, you know, something that makes you feel a little more vulnerable. I would say I should have put a little more thought into this. I'm going to be honest. You know, it was just like the one thing that stood out from the weekend. So I'm like, I'm going to share it. I went to a little game night on Saturday night and we were trying to like, you know, like when you, is it Saber? Like the little swords?
Yeah.
Saber open champagne bottles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there was, I swear to God, 8 champagne bottles that we went through. There was maybe 8 people. It was disgusting. It was very surprising the amount of alcohol these people were putting down.
Oh God.
I would literally
tossing it back.
It's so funny because I go to parties and I have like, someone's like, can I make you a drink? I say, sure. And I drink this. I had like tequila and like whatever in it. And then we're playing drinky games, having fun. But every time I fill up my drink, I just do soda water and lime. And literally no one knew. And I'm like, I'm not hungover on Sunday. How about you? How are you feeling after those 8 champagne bottles?
Champagne is so sweet
too. Oh my gosh.
I can't drink it. It gives me an immediate headache.
Yeah.
But it makes my tummy so ugh.
Oh like, God, I can't imagine. So yeah, I was fake drinking. I literally tell everyone
that's
a fake
smart.
Drink. It's like, just whatever. I'm fun anyways.
Who freaking cares?
And I just, it's not worth it for me right now. I just, no thanks. But so we're all, I learned how to do it. I killed it, opened, like corked it open pretty fucking like a queen, I will say. And someone else did it. And then it's getting a little bit later. People are getting a little more drunk.
Yep.
And one of our guy friends was like, I got it. And It's on video too. That's the funny thing. I should post it on TikTok. It'd probably go viral. The bottle breaks in half and we're all shocked. It's sprayed all over. There's glass pieces everywhere. We're all just like jaw open. We're like, oh my God. Then all of a sudden we notice his hand bleeding, and not just bleeding, like it is pooling on the floor. And he didn't even notice.
Hands bleed a lot, like oh, a yeah. lot.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
He cut open his whole side of his thumb. And the party, the party ended and he went to the ER.
No, he did not.
Yep, had to go get stitches.
No.
Yeah. And then apparently I went home because I was like, I think it's gone. I'm calling it a night. But apparently he got stitches and he ended up at Smack Shack later on. He was like,
he went back out.
Yeah, they were at the ER for 45 minutes. He's like, let's go back to Smack.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh my gosh.
People are ruthless. Right? Like, what are you doing? Oh my God.
It was so good. So
I have a guess of who it was. If I had a guess out of that group, I think I know who it is.
You probably do. Wait, I got to show you one video.
Do you have the video of it?
No, oh, no, I do have the video, let me show you. Hold on, guys. We have to pause just because it is too funny.
Is it bad?
First, I'm going to show you.
Oh, my God.
No, it's not who you think it is, but there's it bleeding.
Oh, my God. Ow.
But this is
the bottle. He would like hit the neck of the bottle. Yeah, like, this not even close.
What I think you think it is, and I think you'll enjoy this video a lot.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, wait.
Well, I think.
Just wait.
Oh, my God. I love him. I love him.
My friend Ross, just a video of his bare ass.
His booty cheeks booty with his cheeks. Phone in him. I don't know. Too Our good. Friends are crazy. I'm not going to lie.
They are crazy.
We got crazy friends.
Crazy. Okay, that was I could definitely go on, but I'm going to keep it short, sweet.
I like a short and sweet.
What you got, girl?
Well, I have like a few random things. I watched the last episode of The Last of Us. Wow, that's a really good show. If you haven't watched it, you need to watch it.
I tried to get into it. Nope, I
didn't try hard enough.
It's just a lot of like... blood and fighting and not blood, but just like,
there's a really good, once you got to the love story, did you get to the love story of the two men?
No.
That's like three episodes in. So you need to get to that one. And then you'll be like, oh my God, it's written so well. You just did what I did to the microphone. It's written so well. And I just love it so much. I don't know. I just had to share that I went to it, but we had our buddy in town this weekend and I was kind of like hanging with the boys this weekend.
That's
and
fun.
You know what?
I was like, hanging with the boys too.
It was kind of fun. Like, it was me and Stu and Jordan. We were just like boys in. And they like invited me to play pickleball. And then we played pickleball with the boys. I felt so like, damn, I'm cool. Like, shit.
You got invited into the boys
yes.
club.
And I even got invited to the boys' dinner. It was me, Ryan, Stu, and Jordan. And I'm like,
that's a big deal.
Wait, so we're at dinner. And I go, you guys, I'm going to take a video. Because I'm making a video of my day.
I'm making a vlog.
And I just thought it was so funny because everybody, Jordan's always a little crabby when he's on camera. Yeah. He just doesn't like to be
Same
on camera.
Same with my boyfriend.
And the other boys are like, oh, like this? Like this?
Oh, they're here, getting is this into good? It.
And we did it. And then we got downstairs like, Sid, don't forget. You got to get a video. And I was like, okay. And so I posted it yesterday.
Guys, low-key love that shit.
And he goes, both of the guys besides my boyfriend in the video responded. And they were like, oh my God, this turned out so great. Such a fun night with you. I was like, I just like friend appreciation.
They're your hype
and
women.
They're just like, they were hyping me up and I felt so badass, but I don't know. I was like, I just like was happy. It was a good weekend. Nothing really crazy happened. Nothing that like wild happened. I did do some research. I told you this yesterday because I was having a little bit of diarrhea. Okay. And
I have the opposite problem right now.
I know. I'm sorry. I didn't want to brag when you said it. So I was like, fuck, I'm just going to let it happen.
Y'all, I'm consty.
I have a serious intolerance to sugar alcohol. And so if you're somebody who's, you know, consuming like foods that have a little sugar alcohol in it, sugar alcohol is not necessarily bad for you by any means at all. But if you have an intolerance and your tummy issues, especially when you're drinking protein powder, but you're not really like fully lactose intolerant, or you're drinking protein powder and it's vegan, you're like, what the hell? Check it out. See if there's ingredients in there that are sugar alcohols. Cause I was like so surprised because literally when I Googled symptoms, when you have sugar alcohol and you can't like digest it, it's verbatim.
It's also like, I wonder if you could be okay with like natural.
I'm sure.
So like you could protein powder with maybe like stevia or like monk fruit. And I bet it would maybe be better. Yeah.
I think so too.
Cause like my protein, that's what makes protein powder good. Like
I know. It's that's so also sweet. Maybe. Well, I add stevia to it anyway. You know, like.
Yeah. Like my protein powder is delicious cause it's fucking fake sugar up the wahoo.
But it's gotta be sweet and good because I tried the other stuff. It's chalky. It's nasty. You're like not gonna get your protein down. Yep. And it's not, no point. Like whatever. Final thing I want to say is we were just talking about this TikTok before.
I keep wanting to eat my microphone.
I just want to get into it. We were talking about the TikTok before. We just saw it. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay, I'm done. I wanted to see how far I could get it back in my throat.
If anyone is listening to this in their car and they just hear, oh, like in their ears in the car, I'm so sorry if that startled you.
Dad.
I just watched a TikTok. It's Alex Earle. She's somebody stitched with Alex Earle. And basically she was talking about it because Alex Earle's like the ideal hot girl right now. Yeah. You know, I get it. And the girl's like, did you know that men are actually like when they see a hot lady, like, and they're looking at, what is it? What's the term?
Idealized
women. They get less attracted to their partner. And it's a psychological thing.
But the same study.
Yes. Done with women.
On females. The girls don't find their partners less attractive.
It's the weird. I was like, oh my God. So now guess what?
You just
kicked off my psycho Instagram girl stage. Okay. I'm like, I'm going to be creeping. Who are you following?
Just kidding. I think we'll chat about that next week when we have Lexi and Lindsay on.
Exactly.
We get that hatred for other women. But like at the same time, we're like, we want to hype other women up. So it's like, what is it? How do we deal with that?
Which one emotions? Is it?
Are we comparing or are we like, get it, girl? You know?
I don't know. It's hard to balance that.
We'll talk about that next week for sure.
Anywho, we have the literal best guest coming on today.
Best.
Holy bananas. I almost said holy vagina.
Well, it works. Holy fucking vagina hormones, fertility, period, microbiome. Let's just keep going. But that's pretty much what we're going to be talking about. Everything hormone related, because I'll kind of share my experience with her and how we like became obsessed, I guess you could say, I have had curiosity about going off my birth control because of my mental health state, dealing with anxiety and all that, which I definitely want to ask her about how a birth control pill can relate to mental health and how it can maybe exacerbate your anxiety or depression.
Yep.
At the same time, sometimes it actually helps with anxiety, depression, but I went off it just to see how I felt without it. And it's because I read her book, Beyond the Pill. She is coming out with a new book, which I think she'll talk about when she hops on, called Is This Normal? Mm-hmm. But let me give her a little bio and then Sid, we can hear about your experience with birth control and all the goods too.
Okay, deal.
So Dr. Jolene Brightman is a hormone expert, nutrition scientist, and thought leader in women's medicine. She is board certified in naturopathic endocrinology and trained in clinical sexology. Dr. Brighton is the author of Is This Normal? A Non-Judgmental Guide to Creating Hormones, Hormone Balance, Eliminating Unwanted Symptoms, and Building the Sexual Desire You Crave. A fierce patient advocate and completely...
I was going to read the other half.
Your mouse.
We usually do half and half.
Your mouse was in my way, and then I couldn't read the other part of it.
Oh,
okay.
It was?
Go for it.
Sorry. I didn't. Oh, because it says who it is.
Yeah, and I was
I'm sorry.
My hormone balance.
Oops. My bad. It tells you who it is typing. A fierce patient advocate and completely dedicated to uncovering the root cause of hormonal imbalances, Dr. Brighton empowers women worldwide to take control of their health and their hormones through her website and social media channels. Dr. Brighton is an international speaker, clinical educator, and medical advisor within the tech community. Wow. She's freaking accredited.
She vegan.
That's what I gotta say.
Doing her shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell us about you're currently on what?
I'm on birth control. I'm on a milli or like milli, I guess it is. And I've been on it since I was...
That's the pill, which is hormonal.
So if you're taking
a pill, it's hormonal. Mm-hmm. If you have an IUD, it's most likely hormonal unless you have the copper IUD.
Right. I take the hormonal mouth pill. I take it once a day, obviously. I've been taking it
mouth
since
pill.
I was literally, pill. 14 or 15.
Uh-huh. Why'd you go on?
So 10 years, I had horrible cramps. I'm getting there. Where it made me sick. Literally, like I would throw up. I was in so much pain. 3 days of like horrendous pain. Like I can't even explain to you what they felt like. It was just terrible. So I kind of didn't have a choice if I wanted to like do normal things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ever have acne. I don't really have it with a pill, but I do get it when I get my period, mm-hmm. which I'm just coming off of it. Hence like I have like a few random spots. I don't know. I'm just worried that it's like affecting my mood, and making me like get a little bit more irritable than I want to. And then sometimes I'm wondering if it has any relation to like, I have hormonal stuff and bubble gut stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like guts, like things. And it's weird because in this pill, it's a really simple formula. I know, cause I've talked to many like, OBGYNs about it, but that's the other side of the opinion. Right. And it's a simple estrogen pill, but it's like, does my body need that much estrogen or does it need less? I don't know. It's really complex. I'm not really exactly sure what I'm going to learn from this, but I'm excited for whatever I'm going to learn. Cause I don't necessarily want to be on the pill anymore, to be honest with you.
And I'm curious, Taylor, did you also have bad cramps?
I did not actually have bad cramps at all. I honestly went on birth control. I remember sophomore year of high school just to regulate my period, but I was lucky. I didn't have bad cramps or like heavy periods at all.
Okay. Mm. I'm just like curious to know, because I know she thinks like, okay, well, if you did have the bad cramps beforehand and then you go off of it, you're probably going to have the same experience, because it's just kind of Band-Aid. It's like a Band-Aid for the time being. Yeah. But if you didn't, like I went on for acne, for example.
Oh.
So like when I went off of it, I didn't experience like horrible cramps and side effects.
Oh, but you, so why would like, you not experience?
So
what you
the
had
thing
before?
Is like, what was the root cause? Yeah. So then like she'll talk about. I wonder, but that's why I went on for freaking acne, and like that's just the easy fix right now. And so I know weird. A lot. We're gonna get into this, but like doctors, necessarily don't know the holistic approach to it and what everything it's doing. And I feel like a lot of times doctors learn the same thing, and it's hard to kind of change your mind. Mm-hmm. If you have your ways, but I'm interested. So.
I am too. I mean, there's many reasons you'd be on the pill. There's many reasons you'd go off it. I'm just curious to see like which option is best for me. And if you're listening, you can make your own educated decision on which route is best for you. So,
and to be clear, she does say she's like not anti-birth control at all. She's more pro-informed consent and helping you make the best decision for you, like Sid just said. So,
All right.
Should we bring her on?
Come on in.
Let's do this. Let's do it. Yay. Dr. Jolene, Dr. Brightman. We keep saying Dr. Jolene just because we keep calling you Jolene when we're talking internally, and we keep singing Jolene, Jolene, Jolene. We can't help it.
We've been singing it all morning. Literally.
I usually am sipping out of a Dolly Parton mug. Today it is the Golden Girls.
cute.
But yeah, I have my little squad goals going.
Oh my gosh. God, that's love. Awesome. I'm going to be honest. I am fangirling right now. And a lot of our listeners are too. We did a little post last night about you coming on the podcast today, and everyone was freaking out. So this is going to be a really exciting conversation,
it's
I think.
Huge. And I mean, I'm currently on birth control. We talked about this in our little entry of our podcast. Soph is not. Mm-hmm. She's on the process of rebalancing and different things like that. But I just wanted to ask a question candidly, because this is candid conversations, obviously, in the beginning of this.
Yeah.
Because we've both been to doctors who are really, really, I don't want to say pushy on the pill, but really advocating for the pill. And there's doctors like you and different people like that who are totally the opposite. Like, how do you find that balance? And how do you know not who to trust, but like which side to pay attention to even in the beginning? Because I'm sure you've gotten not hate, but pressures from other doctors saying, what the heck? You think the opposite of me.
Oh yeah. No, there's like hate all around, because I'm like, hey, instead of like just passing everybody the pill and getting them out of your office as fast as possible, what if we actually ask why they have those symptoms and then give them options and like actually say like, hey, this is what might be going on. We should work that up. The pill is one option. You can also do these other things. You can also take the pill and also do diet and lifestyle and like give them those options. And so there's the people who are like, just take the pill. It's the best thing that ever happened to women. Just say thank you. Be grateful. Shut your mouth about it. And they love to hate. And then there's the people that are like, no one should have access to birth control ever. They're like very ill-informed about birth control. And they're like, and then they hate me because they're like, wait, you actually talk to people about how to mitigate side effects and be safe and be successful using birth control. And I'm like, I know, shocker. I just believe in women having the right to choose and then be supported in whatever that choice is. But in order for you to choose, you have to have all the information. And I get that that's like kind of exhausting because it takes a long time to like do that in a medical practice. And yet I do think it's what women deserve.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So what would you say to doctors that then say, well, my patient's symptoms go away, so it's obviously working? Like, for example, I went on birth control because of acne. Sid went on birth control because she had really bad cramps and was nauseated and had pretty bad PMS type of symptoms. Okay, we go on the pill, it fixes it. So what do you say to doctors then that are saying this?
Oh, sure, it fixes it. Except that when you come off, that it didn't fix it, did it? Because it comes right back. Mm-hmm. So it's a great symptom management tool. And we just have to be honest about that. Like, if I am going to give someone a medication to manage their symptoms, so maybe it's birth control, maybe it's a pain med. Like, do we act like, oh, pain meds are fixing the source of your pain? They're temporarily bringing you relief, but like, why do you have that pain? Sometimes you have to heal, like a bone has to heal, or things need to take time. And so I think we just need to have an honest conversation about that, because it's very misleading to tell women that this is going to fix all of your problems when In fact, if you have something like endometriosis that's causing nausea and vomiting before your period because your pain is so intense, that's not fixed. The pill's not fixing that. Will it lessen the symptoms? In some people, yes. But they need to know that those adhesions can still progress. They can still have this disease progressing. You know, same with PCOS. So acne. Oh, wait, back it up. PCOS is polycystic ovarian syndrome for people who don't know. And one of the main ways it presents is with excess androgens, which is hair loss on the head, hair growth on the chin, chest, abdomen that you don't want, and acne. And so you give them the pill and you're like, great, fixed your acne, except that what caused their acne was PCOS and you didn't address the complex metabolic endocrine disorder that is PCOS and you did nothing to keep them from developing insulin resistance, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, mm-hmm. none of that. So I just think like, we need to broaden the conversation and we need to give that as an option, right? Not everybody has access to the food that it takes to like get acne to be gone, right? Like, so there's food deserts, there's access issues. There's just the damn economy right now. Right. We're like, I can't get a dozen eggs for less than $8. I'm like, God, I used to have chickens. Like I messed up. I need to go back, have chickens again. So there's like all of these variables that can impact our access to choosing differently. And that's where I think it's really problematic if you straight up vilify the pill, because you don't live in that woman's body. You don't live in her life. You don't understand all of her resources. You don't even understand the complex like social dynamic she has going on. Yeah. And so if she chooses to use the pill for whatever reason, your job is to give her that informed consent, tell her what to look out for so she knows when to come back and see you, and enable her to be successful as possible on that, which in some cases is counseling diet and lifestyle. And in others, it's saying, okay, diet's like not something you can really work on. Let's get you on a multivitamin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, that's really well worded, by the way. Like I have never heard it in that big of arch in terms. And I think people don't realize that it's not just let's call it a Band-Aid, and it's not just a active piece to event pregnancy. It's also a lot of other things and a lot of cover up and a lot of not thinking of all the things in one. Jolene, you're still there, right?
I am.
Okay, good. Your camera just went off, so I wasn't sure.
Like, my internet's fine. I'm looking at it.
You're fine. Don't worry. Like,
it's my internet. Okay.
No, you're totally fine.
Okay. She's in Puerto Rico, by the way. We're like, okay.
I know. We started recording after that.
If you have an Ethernet cable too, sometimes that helps. But if not, sometimes we can just keep going and we might just lose your face for part of it. But
I have a massively thick set of concrete walls. I have no Ethernet. There's no such thing here.
It should record her video on her end, so we should be fine. So okay. We'll just assume that you're there. So just flag us if you're not. Okay. Another question I have about this, because we were talking about birth control and taking it, like how does the hormonal birth control affect your microbiomes and things in your tummy and hormones and mental health? I know that's a huge broad question, but for people out there who are wondering, yeah, like I don't get the connection.
Firstly, there's a whole lot we don't know. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, it is ridiculous. It's very ridiculous that this drug has been available on the market for as long as it has, and yet the studies we lack and the understanding we lack is so giant. Like, we have so many questions about birth control. But when you consider, like, women weren't even considered, necessary to include in drug trials until, like, the 90s. And birth control was just like, we just give it to women. They didn't really think a lot about it. So with that, we do know from 2016, a very large study came out showing, it was over 1 million women, there is a correlation between birth control and mental health. So some women develop depression, they need a medication, some are institutionalized, some are experiencing anxiety. The younger you are, so if you're a teen, tends to be a lot worse, and suicidal ideation increases. And so it's important that we are forthcoming that it's correlation, right? Because depression is complex, mood symptoms are complex, and it's going to be very hard to ever say, like, the pill is the one thing that led to this, because there's just so many other things you're dealing with in your life. Just like being a woman, everybody can nod their head with that. So with that, We don't have any studies that say birth control causes depression, birth control causes anxiety, any of this. But there is an association, which like anyone who's ever used the pill, you know, they can tell you that like, yeah, like, you know, there were some things that changed. And for some women, those things that changed were their mood. Mm-hmm. And so following that study, we did have some research coming out showing like a few possible mechanisms of action. So one is that the birth control pill can be inflammatory. So anything that's inflammatory can disrupt brain chemistry. If you think about like when you're sick and you are like have just like a crappy mood, like that's inflammation affecting your brain. So there's the inflammatory component. There's also been some research showing that instead of making neuroprotective chemicals, you may make neurotoxins while you're on the pill, and it may disrupt your pathway of actually making serotonin. So whether you subscribe to the serotonin theory of depression or the cytokine theory of depression, which is inflammation, there are studies to support that's a possible mechanism. Now, quickly, people always rush and they're like, oh my God, don't talk about that. And like, you'll scare women off the pill. But I think we should talk about it because we should be able to screen better at this point of who might be at risk and be able to have that conversation with them and say, hey, like in the next 3 months, if your friends notice like you're not texting back, you're not like engaging in the same way, like you don't feel like yourself, like check in with me. Because sometimes switching formulations or switching the form of contraception is all you need to feel like yourself again.
Right.
And so I think we're doing a really big disservice in trying to be like, well, it's only correlation and there's just not enough evidence and we don't know enough. So let's just like ignore it until we do know more, when there's real people struggling.
That's so funny you mentioned this, because I think Sid and I are like, okay, she's literally hearing us, because that's why I went off my hormonal birth control. Is I had heard, you know, little remnants of people talking about, hey, it actually helped my mental health, and I deal with anxiety and depression, and I don't know how else to explain it besides the fact that I'm like more in tune with myself now. Mm-hmm. Like I like, I like feel more like myself. I'm 6 months off of it right now. So it's interesting that you say that. And then my other question is it true that the birth control can impact our stress response? Because I've also dealt with high cortisol levels my entire life being an anxious person. And I feel a little bit more in control of that now.
So what you're saying about feeling more like yourself is a very common statement. And this is the kind of thing that like, you know, you'll hear people dismiss and say birth control doesn't change that much, except that you could acknowledge that my hormones cycling could change so much that you wanted to flatline them and put me on birth control. Like hormones do affect every essence of our being. I think that sometimes people are like, that's anti-feminism, like anti-women to be like hormones control stuff. But it's like they're chemical messengers. They're literally, their job is to like send a signal and make you do things. Like that's just what their job is. Yeah. And it's not just because you have ovaries that you happen to be at like the mercy of them. Like you can have testes and be at the mercy of them as well. Like anybody's living in a state of hormone imbalance, like they're not fun people to be around and they're not having fun in their body. So I just want to just validate that what you're saying is like a very, very common thing to be like, oh, who is this? Like, I feel more like myself. So I just like one acknowledging that like that can definitely be true for some people. Back to your question. So in terms of asking like, you know, specifically the cortisol response and what's happening with stress. So what we know from some of the research is that your stress response, it's not really like a stress response. Like it's almost like it's blunted, and it can be more matched to like what we see in PTSD. And so there's been some interesting studies to show that sometimes women, when they're on the pill, they may be more inclined to be risk takers. So then people are like, don't put women on the pill. They'll be promiscuous. They'll be risky. No, it's that like they don't necessarily get the signal. I'm kind of like, I watch this in my toddler. Like they don't necessarily get the consequence signal. Like you're about to meet your consequences. So with that, I do want to recommend anybody who's like really wants to deep dive on this entire, so in Beyond the Pill, my first, my previous book, I talk about the whole adrenal component. If you want to get into like, and for everybody listening, adrenals make cortisol. If you want to get into like the cortisol brain, like and nothing but brain, This Is Your Body on Birth Control by the PhD researcher, Dr. Sarah Hill. Phenomenal book. I definitely recommend looking into that because it's just so fascinating that this has been known in research, but like, It's not in the medical practices. It's, I mean, doctors are not talking about the fact that this could impact your stress response.
You had a question about something related to depression.
I did. I'm just wondering about PMDD because, for example, my sister deals with that. So she says the pill helps her with her symptoms. And she's like, I literally can't go off of it or else I will go crazy. And for me, it seemed to help going off it. Yeah. So if you do have PMDD, what do you recommend?
Right. Okay. So let's talk about like, what does it mean to go crazy with PMDD, right? Because we kind of flip it with this like language. I definitely am where I'm like, you're driving me crazy right now. Okay. So with PMDD, it's really extreme. So anyone who's had PMS and they're like, oh, I'm agitated. I'm like gritting my teeth. Like I can't stand how my partner chews. Like I just need to hide out, like amplify that like times a million sometimes where 2 weeks out of the month, you are crying, you are angry, you are like on this like emotionally hijacked train that you just feel out of control in your body and it can sabotage your life, your relationships, your work, all of it. So to understand, because often people are like, it's just bad PMS. So like, you don't need the pill. And I'm like, I wish that was the case, but it's not always the case. So with PMDD, there's a whole lot of things we can do with like optimizing the hormones, getting inflammation down, getting you the right diagnosis sometimes, because sometimes it's PMDD or sometimes you're on the autism, you have autism spectrum disorder or you have ADHD and that gets amplified during that phase of your cycle. Now you can have both. I mean, you can have all three. You can have ADHD, autism, and PMDD. And to understand that often if you're diagnosed with PMDD you have autism or you have ADHD, you're not going to get that diagnosis because your doctor's like, a weighted blanket helps you. And like you can't stand the way some noise sounds because it makes your skin crawl. And they're like, that's PMDD. When in fact, that's a sensory processing issue. That's actually a sign of autism. So I bring that up because autism
we're
is
all like, highly oh, underdiagnosed. God. Yeah. Yeah, highly underdiagnosed, you said, or over?
Highly underdiagnosed in women. Wow. So for a very long time, I mean, there's still people saying this, like, only little boys get autism and ADHD. And I'm like, no, that is not the way it works. So to understand that women aren't getting those diagnoses, like, we're missing a lot of them. And there's, like, a whole phenomenon right now where people are self-diagnosing on TikTok. And I will say that somebody does the research and, like, self-diagnose, they're not usually wrong. And my friends who are trained, my colleagues who are trained to diagnose this, they're like, yeah, they're like never wrong. So to understand that if you suspect this and you're struggling with PMDD, PMDD tends to be high among those neurodivergent groups. So it's just important to understand that when we're talking about treating PMDD, we have to make sure, like, is it just PMDD? Or is there more accommodations that need to be made? Is there more support that needs to be given? Because I think it's a really like shitty approach to just be like, it's just your hormones and like just deal with it. And then you're like still struggling in so many other ways. So to your point about the pill, what's interesting is that in some brains, not all brains, we need a lot more research. I'm going to say like forever, right? But in some brains, they don't use progesterone the way that we would expect. So progesterone should stimulate the GABA receptor in your brain. It should make you feel chilled out. It should make you feel calm, in love with your life. Some people, for whatever reason, that progesterone hits their brain, those metabolites specifically, and their brain is like, we're going to start a riot. Like, start a riot. Like, this is not, like, I am not cool. Zero chill. And that may be the case. It may be correlated more with neurodivergent brains, which we know, like, they work a little bit different. Not worse, not better. Like, they've just got their own strengths. And so with those people, when you put them on the pill, there is no progesterone. And you make no progesterone. So the only way to progesterone in your body is to ovulate. And if the pill is doing its job, its number one mechanism is to stop you from ovulating. If you don't ovulate, you can't make progesterone. What you're taking is progestin. It does not behave the same way when it comes to neurochemistry. And so that may be why some people get on the pill and they're like, this is the best thing to happen to my mood because we just took away all of the progesterone and we just flatlined their hormones. So no more ups and downs, just consistent hormones. And that's, you know, something that like, even though your sister has PMDD and you didn't, and you had different experiences, like, I think that's an important thing to know because that's exactly what we should be talking about, bioindividuality. Like, we shouldn't expect that just because one study says the pill works this way for one person, that will be true for everyone in the population.
Completely agree with that. Holy crap.
My mind's blown.
What, we're less than 20 minutes into an episode and I've already learned more than I've ever learned from
in my life.
Like anything. Holy, what?
I'm really excited.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, holy jeez. I'm going to talk about hormones in a second when we transition to that. But I wanted to say, like, I've been curious of going off the pill. I have mood swings and I'll talk about what I'm seeing in a little bit. But my mood swings are bad, and especially pre-ovulation and all the things. So for somebody who's curious even about going off the pill, like, what do you suggest that process looks like? Is there like cold turkey? Is it go to the doctor and ask your doctor? Is it do your own research? Like, what do you suggest I do, or anybody does?
Yeah. Okay. So if you ask your doctor, they're going to say, well, do you want to get pregnant? And if you say no, they're going to say, then stay on the pill. That's going to be it. End of discussion.
That was my experience.
Mm-hmm. And it is something that, like, there's like a sweet spot. Like, if you're going to like a gynecologist, I actually like, I'm looking for a new gynecologist and working with my PCP, I'm like, I want one that's like pretty fresh, but not too fresh, because younger, they're going to be less entrenched in this dogmatic way of thinking. And I honestly, I'm just like, I'm in my 40s and I'm like, I'm just too tired. I'm just too tired of like having to have those conversations. And that's me as a doctor who can be like, we're talking about the research here. So with that, if you started the pill, this is what I talk about in my book, Beyond the Pill. If you started the pill because you are having symptoms like acne, mood swings, painful periods, like you said that you had, if you're having heavy periods, prepping your body before you come off is a good idea. And I give a whole protocol in there. The most important thing is the nutrition and lifestyle components of that. And really, it's like getting a nutrient-dense diet, making sure that you're sleeping, you're exercising, you're drinking water, like doing all these things like, yeah, that you know to do. And then figuring out like what might be your hormonal issues and starting to address those. Doing that about 3 months before and then transitioning off. So stopping once you're done, it's going to make you more successful, less likely to feel like you've got to go running right back on the pill because like all hell is breaking loose. If you started the pill primarily for pregnancy prevention, no issues, you can come off and then just follow the protocol then and support your body. I have seen many patients who they like acne, for example, they feel like they're chained to the pill. And that's something that like, if we're going to use it for a tool, it should be your ally, not your like oppressor. Like you shouldn't feel like, oh, it's got a strong hold on me. Like I can't do life without it. And so that's really the aim of that whole protocol, is to make it so that you're successful and that you can come off and not have to go running right back to it.
So people that are curious about going off the hormonal birth control and they want still a form of, you know, contraception, or, you know, they don't want to get pregnant, what are the options for them? I mean, I know I'm curious about the copper IUD, but I'm also really scared about that. Yeah. And how do you not get pregnant?
Copper IUD wins. Okay. So like very, very high efficacy rate. People always get afraid like it's going to bust through your uterus or like jump out of your body. And like, that's a very, very low risk. If you have a history of endometriosis or severely painful, heavy periods, copper IUD, probably not going to be successful for you.
Dang it.
But it has a very, very high efficacy rate. There are some people who have noted copper issues. The research says that, hey, if you have copper storage disease, this is probably not right for you, which is, you know, a good inclination that there might be something to like having this, having more copper in your body. However, I haven't seen, like, there's not been, like, this huge demographic of people that are having issues with this, but it's something to be mindful about. So copper IUD is definitely one. Barrier methods, I just don't think they get enough play in non-monogamous relationships. I mean, everybody's like, get on the pill. And I'm like, yeah, but you also need condoms. They're like, why? I'm on the pill. And I'm like, because chlamydia is real. Like, that's why. Like, you know, picking up these STIs and condoms are, and barrier methods are not even 100% guarantee that you can prevent an STI, but we want to do the best we can because most of these infections are asymptomatic. And as I talk about, like, I have a whole STI section in Is This Normal? And talking about how they're asymptomatic and they can lead to issues like infertility or pelvic inflammatory disease. Like, we don't want any of those things. So barrier methods are another. Fertility awareness method is one that works well for some people. It needs to be the basal body temperature. So first thing in the morning, taking your temperature combined with tracking your symptoms to have the highest efficacy rate. So you're going to be looking for fertile cervical mucus. Is your libido up? How are you feeling in your body? If you're feeling if you feel really sexy, that is a good sign that you're about to ovulate because all of your hormones are working for you then.
And there's an app for that, right?
I was going to say, that sounds really intimidating, but I've heard that the new Apple Watch takes your temperature and you can connect it to an app and tracking your cycle and you know when you would ovulate then, right?
Yeah, so I have not tried out the Apple Watch one. I'm actually an Oura Ring wearer.
Oh, yeah, that's what I want. Oh my God.
I like the ring. but I do, one thing I'll say is that if you lift really heavy weights, these are hard to wear, where I can see the Apple Watch has efficacy. But what's great is, so there's an app called Natural Cycles, and that can connect with Oura and take your data. And that app is the first one that the FDA is like, yes, this one could actually help you. Their algorithm is dialed in. And that one, you can see when you ovulate. It's going to take about 3 months for it to be really predictive. You can take LH test strips to try to, which is luteinizing hormone that predicts within 48 hours you're going to ovulate. Wow. To help it out. But I actually use the Oura connected with Natural Cycles and it's pretty spot on. It does really well. So, but you can also go old school and use a paper and pencil. There's people who love that. I am not those people. I am definitely a digital, I need to wake up. You tell me, I don't want to deal with taking my temperature. Just you do it. Daisy is another one that you can put it's a little device that you put under your tongue. It's a thermometer and that connects to an app and that will do it as well. That one's for fertility. That's how it's approved, is for predicting fertility to get pregnant, but it's the same premise. But know that fertility awareness method isn't going to work for everyone. And for people listening, one of the most common things I'll hear is my friend used that and they got pregnant, or someone will tell me, oh, I got pregnant. And when I ask them, okay, what were you doing during your fertile window? Oh, we were using the pull-out method. You were not, in fact, using fertility awareness method. You were using the pull-out method, which about 5 in 100 are going to get pregnant in a year using that. And so one of the principles of FAM that you cannot mess around with is you cannot have a situation where semen is granted entrance to the vaginal canal. Else you want to do. Is this normal? I have a whole chapter on sex of all kinds. There's lots of things you can do, but penetrative sex without a condom is not one of them.
I just had an appointment with my doctor and she was like, so what do you use for birth control? And I said, the pull-out method.
No, you did not.
Yeah. And she was like, oh, well, you have a chance of getting pregnant. I'm like,
you go, yeah.
Okay. So she was like trying to convince me to do the copper IUD. So I made an appointment. I'm so scared to get it. But I go, so do I not have to use the pullout method then? She's like, no. And I go, I'm convinced.
No, I can't. I've heard not positive things from people who have similar period styles to me. So I'm like, I'm not in for the copper IUD, sadly, just because. Yeah. I think my period's too extreme, but talking about hormones, transitioning into our hormone conversation, what does it mean even to balance your hormones? Because I feel like it's such a fad. It's kind of trendy. Soph and I were talking about this. How do you even go about doing that?
Yeah. So I totally know what you're saying because, I feel patients would be oh, I want to balance my hormones. And we talk about just balancing hormones, largely because of how it optimizes the entire endocrine system. And then what we have really seen is a rise in I don't want to vilify anybody. Influencers, health coaches, things like that, they really have their heart in it to try to help people. But they don't understand what they don't understand. And so you'll hear them say do this thing to balance your hormones. So for me, talking generally, no problem saying balancing your hormones. When a patient comes in And they're like, I need to balance my hormones. Tell me more about that. Like, let's get into like, what are we talking about? So sometimes that's like, hey, I'm having constipation, hair loss. I'm freezing cold all the time. Like, I'm super, super fatigued. Like, I feel like something's off my hormones. Like, I need to balance my hormones. Okay. That's sounding like hypothyroidism, which is imbalance of thyroid hormone. So now we get specific in that conversation. I do this in my book, Is This Normal?, where I have a whole quiz. So it's like, you know, if you're talking about a hormone imbalance, let's figure out what's imbalanced here. Because is it that we've got insulin issues? Is it that we've got adrenal issues? Is there an imbalance of how much progesterone and estrogen that we have during the luteal phase? And like getting really specific with that. It's so interesting to me because I will see doctors being like, hormone imbalances aren't real. You shouldn't say hormone balance. That's not a thing. And I'm like, but you could read a research paper about PCOS and they'll say PCOS is a hormone imbalance. And you're yes, it's excess androgens. It's a deficiency of progesterone in a lot of cases. There's an imbalance of insulin. So like, again, there's like that disconnect where, and I feel like I don't like that kind of shamey behavior because being like, oh, there's no such thing as a hormone imbalance and all of that, it feels like more dismissal of women and putting the burden on the patient that they should have the absolute correct terminology to even like approach the altar that is doctor. And I'm like,
it's like leveling, they're saying hormone people. Imbalance. Like,
That's that's exactly what it is. And you know, there's like, I don't know, you spend time on TikTok, man, there's doctors with like a hell of a lot of ego that like really make their entire platform on like hating people. Mm-hmm. And like, they're like, I'm such a nice doctor, come see me in person. And then they're like stitching someone being like, this idiot, they probably blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this is the real you right here. You think you're fooling us, but I'm like, why would you do that? Like, to me, I'm like, if we have an opportunity to educate, empower, create change, we do that through having positive conversations. Mm-hmm. If people are already wary of doctors and that's why they're like, I would rather do this like harmful weight loss tea thing because my doctor treated me like trash and I don't trust them anymore. Coming in as a doctor and being like, this is stupid, and having commentary where you shame them or you level them, that kind of thing. I'm like, it's not just this person. It's everybody who watched this. You had an opportunity to influence in a positive way. Now is like, less likely to go see their doctor. And then these same doctors are like, it's the influencers who do this. It's the podcasters and the health coaches and these people. They're the ones that keep people from going to the doctor. I'm like, no, it's literally your shit attitude on the internet. Like, true. Stop being this person.
That's why before you even came on yesterday, we were posting on our story about you and we shared the reel where you were saying your symptoms are real and your doctor should listen to those, because I've had so many experiences where I go to the doctor and I share like why, what I'm feeling, and like the amount of GI appointments I've gone to for constipation when really like this is a lot to do with probably some hormone imbalances. And now I got estrogen dominance, which I definitely want to talk about actually. So we might as well. So we're candid here and we talk a lot about poop. Poop is like,
that's my life,
right?
It's so life as well.
I got two boys and I am a doctor. Like that's like, poop is what I do. Your life.
So my question for you is, one, is it normal to poop more in your period? And then two, what is like, do we have more of a reason behind why we get constipated? Sometimes I'm currently constipated. So low key, I just need some help.
Okay.
That might be a self question.
No, these are like super common questions. In fact, like, so in Is This Normal? There are all of these Ask Dr. Brighton sections. These are the common questions I get. And period poops and constipation are big ones. So, okay, period diarrhea, this is a real thing. So there's these hormone-like chemicals called prostaglandins. They are like, they're really good at contracting things like your uterus to get babies out or shed the endometrial lining of your uterus, which is what your period is. So when these guys are made, like these faces right now.
But seriously, so, I just connected. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, I know. This is something that like patients all the time are just like, why do I poop so much on my period? And is this all the poop from the, where was I storing this poop? Is this all the poop from the month? Like what is happening?
Why?
Yeah. So what typically happens is that progesterone goes higher. It should, of post-ovulation, about a week after you ovulate, it's going to be at its peak, and that's going to slow your muscles in your gut. So now things don't move at the same rate they normally would. So you might feel a little bit constipated. We'll define constipation a little bit more, but then your period comes. Prostaglandins, which are made from omega fatty acids, if your diet is higher in omega-6s than in omega-3s, these little buggers are really potent and they get all crazy in there. And they don't care what they're stimulating, they're just like cramped down. And your guts get to moving. And so now you're pooping, maybe you're having diarrhea. I think it's the worst thing to be like, I just put a tampon in. Yes. Now I have diarrhea.
Oh, no.
And
oh.
Like, I have to, like, I'm not ready to change the tampon. Yes. But now there's poop.
It's the worst.
And like, I like, and then maybe you have to do a dry pool. Oh, like, I hate that. Like, that's so bad. Like, and that's like, yes, these are real things, people.
They are real.
You so, fit right yeah. in right over here at Straight
With our candid.
Candid
convo. Seriously.
Oh, so with that, eating more omega-3 fatty acids can help. Taking an omega-3 supplement, okay. So recommend a high-quality third-party tested one. Getting like 2,000 milligrams of like an EPA and DHA. That way you get something for your brain too in there. That can be helpful, as can eating more magnesium-rich foods and making sure you take magnesium. Okay. So if you're someone who has really painful cramps and you have period diarrhea, like hitting like 300 milligrams of magnesium glycinate, that's the specific form that's been helpful with like PMS and like all things women's hormones. Taking that like 5 days or more before your period. I mean, honestly, you can take it every single day. But if you're somebody who's like, I can't be bothered with that, at least like 5 days before your period.
I've been feeling, and I mean, I'm still on the pill, but I've been taking magnesium and omega-3s. And I'm like able to reason with myself a little better. I know that sounds crazy, but before I feel myself.
No, it doesn't.
I'm about to tweak a little. And get a little spicy.
Yeah.
I can like be like, oh, that's actually really not something you need to get that pissed about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, and I can like kind of pull myself back. So now I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get the Nuva ring. I'm going to read both your books. I'm going to do all these things. Because this was kind of a both question. This was an us question and a written in question. Can you give us an example of a common like hormonal imbalance that you see in a lot of people or a lot of symptoms and they're just kind of like letting it happen? Maybe not even paying attention
sure,
to it.
But first, can we like talk? We didn't talk about constipation.
Yeah. Oh, I thought that's what you're saying. Cause taking all of those pills.
I was
will
like,
help.
I want to
well,
hear.
Well, that's for the like period diarrhea. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So constipation
oh, I was like,
sometimes
yeah.
like, yeah, you're like, let's go. Okay, constipation, that's when you're actually skipping going to the bathroom altogether. Like you're not pooping. Sometimes people say constipation and what it is like instead of the morning, it happens in the evening and it's a little difficult to pass and like that can be troublesome. So few things, making sure you're drinking enough water. Like you have to be hydrated because what the large intestine does really well is it pulls water back in. It's like, all right, you greedy little digestive system, like spilling all this water, like the body needs to hold on to that. And so it'll just like suck your stool dry. Like it'll just like make it dry and hard. That is like such a gross thing that I just said, like the image I just conjured up. I'm like, oh, no. So anyhow, we got to stay hydrated. Fiber. Yes. If you're not already getting 25 grams of fiber every day, slowly increasing that. You don't want to go from like 0 to 25 because then you're going to fart and not poop and it's not going to be fun. So increasing that gradually, the best way to do that is start increasing your plants, start increasing the plants that are coming in. Movement. You got to move your body. Now you're not moving your body, you can't expect to poop. So you've got to get moving. And sometimes it's just as simple as gentle walking. And then, you know, if we're employing those things, but it's just like, I just got to get it to move today. This is where the form of magnesium called magnesium citrate can help. Mm-hmm. Starting with 100 milligrams, maybe going to 300 milligrams because everybody's a little different. And if you get like magnesium shits, it's not fun. It's not fun. But that can help loosen things up and get things going as well. And that might even be something that like you need to use while you like work on increasing the fiber.
Okay.
Is it That's true? Doable. Is it true that when you poop, you like release hormones?
Yeah. Okay. So in your gut is the microbiome and there's a specific subset of these organisms involved in the estrobilome. And the estrobilome is what interacts with your estrogen. So in that, your liver packages up your estrogen you no longer need. And then it puts it into the bowels and to the kidneys. So this is why we're going to drink that water so we can pee it out. And then we're also going to poop it out. And so yes, when you are moving your bowels, you are moving any, the things that your body no longer needs, you're escorting out of your body. And well, so that is one way that we remove our hormones that are not needed. People are always like, yeah, but what if I need more estrogen? Should I get constipated? I'm like, no. Constipation is never the answer to anything. Don't try for that. Fecal impaction is real, and you don't want somebody to have to digitally remove your poop from your body. Let's avoid that.
I don't ever want that, ever. Wow. That's helpful, though.
Never.
Wow. Yeah. I'm like, thank okay, you. I know what to do.
Yep.
I know what to do. I'm like, check, check. Okay, got my notebook out. I'm ready. Well, now I suppose is a good time then to ask about the common hormones that people are just living with. And like you might see them in your practice and they're just like, yeah, I have this and I've been living with it. Who cares, right? And it's like, no, this is something you really need to be paying attention to.
You know, it's this funny thing where fatigue is just like accepted as something that like is normal. I even hear doctors, like patients have gone to them and the doctor's like, yeah, you're fatigued. Everyone's fatigued. Like, what's new? And I'm like, way to normalize the dysfunction, which is medicine, okay, and how doctors live. But it's not normal to feel fatigued. So that's just one thing that I want to say. You know, one of the really common things, I mean, there's so many common things, like there's PCOS, there's imbalances in estrogen, progesterone. So seeing somebody struggling with PMS, like I'm, you know, covering all of these things in my book. I think thyroid disease is definitely still one, even though we know that it's like over 27 million Americans are walking around with thyroid disease and half don't even know it. Like, it's still something that's underdiagnosed. And so, you know, sometimes it's the constipation from that. Sometimes it's feeling fatigued. Sometimes it's having long, heavy periods or irregular periods. Doctors don't usually chalk up irregular periods to being normal, but sometimes you're bleeding like more than 7 days and they're like, ah, oh, that's not so bad. And that can actually be a sign of thyroid disease. Weird things too, like you get out of bed in the morning and your feet like hurt as soon as you touch the ground, or your voice is becoming more gravelly and deeper. Like, these kinds of like weird things like can actually be a sign of hormonal issues, and people may not even notice it. Like, if somebody's like, you kind of sound like a smoker, like you might need your thyroid checked. Like, we should evaluate like the other symptoms that you have going on.
Oh God. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Oh, no. I actually just had my thyroid looked at because I have a growth on my thyroid. It's benign, mm-hmm. but it is growing on my thyroid, and we're hoping that it doesn't get any bigger. Otherwise it will cause what everybody knows to be a thyroid removal, because it's sitting on your thyroid connected. So my voice has gotten groggy. I had gone to the GI for it because I thought it was
thinking you have GERD,
acid reflux or GERD. And I had been diagnosed with gastritis, acid reflux and colitis, and none of which are current. So it's just like, it's just crazy, because I'm realizing everything connected.
Heartburn is really common in hypothyroidism as well. So what's interesting about heartburn is the way that we treat it is by suppressing the acid even more in the way we treat it. The typical way. I don't treat it like this.
I took that medication for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but what it actually is that you need thyroid hormone to stimulate the parietal cells, which are the cells that secrete acid in your stomach, to actually do their job. And if you have sufficient acid, the esophageal sphincter, which is the gatekeeper between your gut and your throat, so you're not going to allow acid to go up into your throat. And so heartburn can actually be a sign of hypothyroidism. And it's a very overlooked sign. And it's often like, take a PPI. What does a PPI do? It makes it so you don't liberate your minerals like iron, one of the ones you need to make thyroid hormone. And so it can impact your ability to get those nutrients. And this is why I always say, you're not what you eat, you're what you actually absorb. If you're not absorbing it, like if it's just poop, then it's just poop.
Wow. Are you having a revelation?
Yeah. And I'm like, I want to storm into my little doctor's office and say, listen up, everybody, I got some facts.
Okay. Next question would be, so we know in the Is This Normal book that you have a full section dedicated to your sexual self. So we thought we'd chat a little bit about sex hormones, because we love chatting about sex over here. So what hormones have to do with our libido, and how do we support our libido?
Mm-hmm. So there is a whole chapter on libido. You know, the funny thing is that the first section of the book is your sexual self. It was actually going to be the second section. I was like, we'll just put the, like, it was actually going to be just a chapter. I was like, you know, I'll just make a chapter on sex. Yeah. Everyone wants hormones. When I went through and looked at all of the Ask the Dr. Brayton questions I get on social media, the ones that I get from readers, from patients, I was like, everybody's asking about sex. There's so much sex. So there's a lot of sex in there. And libido is one of the big ones of like, do I have low libido? Like I go into like, there's all of these variables and things to consider and things that can affect your libido. Everybody right away is like, testosterone. Like it must be low testosterone, which it can be. Very common in pill users for it to be a testosterone problem. But estrogen also plays a role in this. I think that estrogen often gets vilified and it's like estrogen is causing your PMS and your period problems, but like it is also causing things to get juicy down there and you to get engorged. And it's part of what helps you not get yeast infections and BV. So like praise estrogen. It's amazing like that. So those are two really important hormones. One that nobody ever talks about in libido but needs to be considered is progesterone is like the blocker in the bedroom. So when you think about what your body's up to, your body's like, let's capture some sperm and ovulate because we can only get pregnant one day, but those sperm, they can live five. So let's capture some sperm and ovulate. And it doesn't matter, like your body, like if you've got ovaries in your uterus, your body doesn't care who you're attracted to, whether or not you want a baby. Your biology is just like, let's do this thing. Once you ovulate, you had your chance. Your body's like, yeah, you should have done it. You should have done it while the egg was good. But like progesterone's here and progesterone's like, you know, I'd rather like get into some sweatpants than get into their pants because that's cuddle. So that's a hormone that like rarely gets talked about. But why you see the memes that where people are like, oh, I don't understand women. One day they're like so into us and the next they're not. And is like we were ovulating and it's so true. We ovulated, then progesterone came and is like, nah, you better like, you better be bringing orgasms if yes. I'm gonna get into this.
I literally get like grossed out by like, I'm like, don't touch me at certain parts of my cycle. And other parts I like just wanna hug and cuddle. But I'm like, I have to be like, I need to start sharing my menstrual cycle with you because like you need to know not to touch me on these days. Like I get so, it's bad though. Like it's so drastic difference, such a drastic difference.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like, it's not, the problem isn't touching you. Now, sometimes it is. Cause I'm definitely one of those people of like, don't make a sound. Don't breathe if you can. And don't touch me. Like I just like sensory deprivation. Can you put me in a dark room with a weighted blanket and earplugs? Yeah. Like I love this. So with that though, sometimes it's more of like, I need you to, so in the book, I describe the sexual excitation and inhibition models as being like the gas pedal and the brake. And sometimes it's like, I need you to ease up these breaks in my life. Like I need you, like these laundry that we've been talking about that you like can't make it in the hamper for like a month. This is the time if you want to get in bed with me and like it be a good time and not me being like, you know, doing the legs distance, pushing you away. Like you got to get the laundry in the hamper. Like, you know that like when I'm stressed, these things help me do those things and disengage those breaks. As I describe it, if you think about like a train track, and this train track is like is a nerve, all right, or your nervous system, and the train is the sex signal trying to get to the brain. But if all they're laying down is blockades all day, and by they, I mean everybody in your life, like you could have a boss that sucks that did something or a client that did something and that lays down a blockade. You may like come home and be like, I want to talk to my partner about how shit my day was. And your partner's like, not now, the game's on, blockade. Like, and then it may be a situation where it's like, oh God, like, you know, I'm not feeling good in my body and I'm starting to have some body image, like negative self-talk, blockade. And then when your partner comes in and they try to touch you, that train signal cannot get to your brain because of all those blockades, none of which is intentional. You did not choose this. You did not intend this. This is just the reality of being you. And so you're like, my nervous system, like, and that feeling of like, I don't want to be touched is like, you're raw with all of this stress and you just feel like overwhelmed and any more sensory input is like just pushing the train off the tracks. Like it just derails altogether. And you're like, not only are we not going to sexy town, but like, you better get away from me because we're about to go like nuclear right now.
Wow.
Holy crap.
It's crazy. So nice to be validated.
I know.
Do you realize that? Like how many people you're validating right now? I'm like, because I'm like, God, we should be hooking up, right? Like
We haven't in a while. Yeah. And I was horny and now I'm like, oh my God, yeah, okay. I can't. No. Like your head looks weird and your hair is messy and you just ruffled the pillow way too hard and it hit me in the eye and I'm irritated. You know what I mean? Like all the things.
Weird. Oh my God. Or when they sit on the couch like too aggressively and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Or they're chewing loud and then they're like, hey, wait, what do you think? And I'm like, oh God, no. Chew your food. You're done. Nope. Sleep on the couch. Done.
It's amazing how men have like mated in relationships with women so long.
We're so nice. No, I'm just kidding.
We could like never talk about this before. Like, yeah. It's just like we need to normalize these conversations because I think if like men were clued in more to all of this, like they would understand just like how complex we are. Like there's all of this sensory input coming in that is like basically deal breakers or like, you know, sex makers. Like you have to, like things have to be going right. And I will so often hear men or see men like online being like, oh, well, like, you know, she's just withholding sex from me. Like, what about what I do all day? The brain doesn't care. The main sexual organ does not care what you do all day. Doesn't like, no. And it's not a choice. She's not being like, I'm just going to withhold sex from you. Like, her whole nervous system is like, I mean, do men even comprehend sometimes that like you're asking to enter someone's body? Like you're inside our bodies. Like it's very that's intimate. Intense. Like and it's the level deal. Of trust and relaxation and ease that needs to happen. Yes. And yet they're like, well, I'm your husband and I work hard. So therefore I deserve sex. And I'm like, whoever told you you were entitled to anybody's body was wrong. As a mother of two boys, they're going to help change this narrative because yes. I'm like, men need to teach men. Men need to teach men to do better.
Send this podcast to your mans, y'all.
Yes. And we're not yeah. man-shaming or no. hating. It's just.
So they can fight me on the internet.
No. Literally, I'm like, fight all you need.
I'm just joking.
The men need to hear this. That's all I got to say.
Last question before we go into quick fire. I just have one regarding birth control yeah. pills and losing attraction to your partners when you go off birth control pills. Mm. I've heard that's a thing and I want to know why.
It's trendy on Instagram right now.
You know what's interesting? Is that we've known that birth control for various reasons, and we don't fully understand it, but there's been several studies done showing that it affects who we're attracted to. So one being the MHC complex, which is part of our immune system and tells us about we smell that on others and tells us about like basically genetic diversity. And you biologically should want to mate with the most diverse person because that's how evolution like rolls the dice and gets like the best outcome. And so that's one thing is that we know that some people who are on the pill are attracted to people who are more genetically similar to them, which is where everybody's like, ew, like that explains this or that. But like, you know, we also have to like ask the question, like, how much is this like weighing on some people? The other thing is that when you're on birth control, you know, there have been studies where women are, you know, they're attracted to faces that aren't exhibiting more masculine features. And this is where everybody gets like really upset about me talking about gender and masculine features. This is just what testosterone does and what has classically been defined in the research as masculine features. This is not my opinion. So when you see higher testosterone, like you see that like square jaw, like there's that facial structure that is more masculine. And so what they found in the research is that off the pill, this is what you're attracted to. On the pill, it's more feminine features. And you may be more interested in things of like, how stable are they? How much money do they make? Like, what is their family background like? Instead of just having that kind of like primal attraction, so to speak. It also goes the other way. So strippers, when they're ovulating, make more money. Women on the pill, because they don't go through that same, like you should not ovulate. They don't go through those same hormonal changes, may not be perceived in the same way as somebody would be in their ovulatory phase, because ovulation makes us more curvy, our lips more plump, less fine lines and wrinkles, our voice changes to be more attractive. I'm sorry for everybody listening. When they recorded the audiobook, I was on my period. I could not schedule it around ovulation. I was like, come on guys, I'm gonna sound so much better around ovulation. They're like, sorry, bleed and read, like that's the way it is. So there may be some truth to this, and what I think is the most interesting is when you talk to women and you hear their stories about like I was on the pill. I was with this person. I came off. I was no longer attracted. This is like depression. Can we say it was just the pill? No, because you're cohabitating with a human. That's hard. There are like so many other variables in this, but I do think it's worth questioning more and understanding like what is going on here so we can give the real answer. Most people are opposed. They're very opposed to like any of this research being done or questioning this or even having a conversation about this because, again, they don't want to believe that hormones influence us this much. People like to believe we're not animals. Sorry, we're animals.
Dang, wow. So, oh God, I like sometimes I don't even know how to react because I'm like, this is just so like mind blowing. I'm like, whoa, I want to say this, but I'm like, no, it's just not even complex enough to answer and reiterate. Thank you for answering that. We actually had reached out to our listeners and we're like, we're going to have Dr. Brighton on. We're going to have an opportunity to ask questions. And we got an enormous, overwhelming amount of questions. So
the amount of people that thought this was like their doctor's appointment. Oh was my funny. God. So, we can quick fire this for you.
We're making an ask Dr. Brighton section in the podcast right now. And so we're going to quick fire. These are going to be quick. We have to respond quick. That's fine. But I'm excited because some of these are amazing. So do you want to start? So
sure.
Okay.
So first question is, I just recently found out I have ovarian cysts. I'm curious if she thinks this could be from the pill and if there's anything I can do more holistically to treat them.
Yes. So we don't actually see the pill as being the causative factor with ovarian cysts, but we do see a lot of doctors using the pill to try to prevent ovarian cysts. It doesn't actually, there's not good research to show this as a treatment for ovarian cysts. And so figuring out like what kind of cyst it is and what's going on, because sometimes ovarian cysts they're caused by endometriosis. So you definitely want to look into that.
Okay. Okay. Next question.
I'm trying to be quick.
Oh, no, I love it.
No, I like that.
Next question is, I deal with horrible acne. I was on Accutane when I was in high school and it kept me clear for a couple years. It started coming back. So I went on the pill and it seemed to definitely help. I tried going off the pill and bam, acne came back again. Is there such thing as a root cause for acne? Is this a hormone imbalance or just bad luck?
Yes. So if the pill's helping, then it is hormonal acne. And most cases of acne are hormonal, not all, but most. And so what's the most common cause? Excess androgens and some higher levels of DHT may be at play. So your doctor might miss because they test free testosterone or only testosterone. You should test free testosterone, but it may be a DHT issue where you're taking your testosterone, converting it into dihydrotestosterone. Things like zinc, saw palmetto can help, spironolactone can definitely help. But if you are struggling with that kind of acne, don't forget that PCOS, this might be the way it's presenting for you. It depends on your other symptoms. So don't just try to treat the acne without understanding if there's something else at play. Last thing is that even though people really hate this, dairy and sugar might need to leave your diet because those have been shown for some people to make acne worse. Is it true for everyone? Absolutely not. But the question we always want to ask is what's true for you?
Mm-hmm. Just quick curiosity out of like the acne and periods question. I always get acne with periods. There was a ton of questions that wrote in about actually getting acne on your period. Any advice for that?
Yeah. So when you get acne on your period, usually it's because progesterone, estrogen drop, and testosterone can come and stimulate. Progesterone can also cause your pores to swell, so sometimes that can trap things in there. So making sure you have a good skincare routine that matches your skin type, that's definitely important. This is where topical vitamin A can actually be helpful. Topical vitamin A can also help with aging, so like it's good stuff. And so the other thing too is ask yourself, do I get constipated before my period or do I have like harder to pass stools and then I get acne? Because if it doesn't go out your bowels, it's going to come out your skin. And so if that's the case, work on the gut stuff.
Okay. Ooh. Okay.
I wish I could be so selfish and just be like, okay, I have an appointment. Actually, you guys can listen. I have all my questions.
I know, me too. I'm like, oh, well, this about me.
You're like, actually, forget your questions. Yeah. I have my own.
No, literally. Okay. Next one says, I am curious to go off the pill, but I went to help with my horrible periods. Painful, throbbing, and throwing up. It hurts so bad. I'm horrified to go off and get horrible acne and not be able to go to work or get work off for a few days. How long will I regulate?
Take to regulate.
Sorry, your mic is in the way. So I'm trying to guess what the words are.
I'm like, okay, so firstly, before you come off, like, go see your doctor and figure out what's going on. Because if this is endometriosis, adenomyosis, fibroids, something else going on, you definitely want to know that and be able to address that. Because if you have, like, endometriosis and you have adhesions, they might want you on the pill and then want to do, when they do the laparoscopy to diagnose, they want to do the removal then of those adhesions. So definitely figure out what's going on. How long it will take your body to regulate is really going to depend. Like, it is a very complex question. A general guideline is to say, for as long as you've had those symptoms, including the time that you've been on the pill, that's how many months of working on that issue that you can expect things to resolve. Mm. Does that mean that, oh, like, it's going to take that long for things to get better? No, it just means that that's like the time you should give yourself and things should improve. But understand, if you have something like endometriosis, getting it into remission, getting it under control, yes, you're never going to be able to cure that. And I think that's really important for people to understand, because as trendy as saying hormone balances and all these things on the internet, so is promising people things that are not realistic. And I think that is a huge disservice.
How do you rebalance hormones post-baby?
Ooh, post-baby. This is like it's a big question. Somebody with a toddler who's still not sleeping, I just want to acknowledge that. sleeping. So sleeping, like, is the thing. So after you have a baby, you deliver the placenta, your hormones drop to that of like a postmenopausal woman. Like, it is a big, significant drop.
Oh, wow.
You're then going to lead on your adrenal glands. So you need to make sure that as much as you can, consistent meals, consistent sleep. And I know that's very, very difficult in the beginning. I have my first book is called Healing Your Body Naturally After Childbirth, where I talk about this, about postpartum and that fourth trimester. So taking care of your adrenal glands, that's a must. You may, you may even bring in like more B vitamins, magnesium, vitamin C, things that we know support the adrenals. And then making sure that you're keeping track of your thyroid, because postpartum thyroiditis usually shows up 4 to 6 months after having a baby. This is an autoimmune thyroid condition. About 1 in 12 women experience this worldwide. So you're going to feel like all your hormones are in chaos because your thyroid is literally being attacked by your immune system. So if you find that you get depression, anxiety, you have a drop in breast milk, you're having trouble sleeping, or you're feeling just like way more fatigued than all of your mom friends, that could be a sign of thyroid disease. So that's like the basic, like, foundational stuff, which is this normal? I have a pyramid in there.
Oh, perfect.
And the foundation is adrenals and insulin. The next level up is thyroid. That's what I just talked about at the very tippy top. That's your sex hormones. So you want to work on all of that early postpartum so that when the sex hormones come back, they're optimal.
Oh my God, I have like 3 books to read. Holy crap. Yeah. I'm so excited. I've never been more excited to read, by the way, in my life. Like, for real. I'm like, oh my God, finally something that actually like associates your life and all the things.
I actually had someone reach out to me and they're like, you know, like, this is a friend. She's like, I would love to get your book, but like, I'm going to be honest, there's no way I'm going to read it because I can never read a book front to back. And I'm like, oh, you don't have to read this book front to back. You can literally say, I got this problem, and jump in and read that problem and then yeet the book and like come back to it later. But there's even like, I'm like, even the 28-day program, you can just go into that and be like, I'm just going to do this and not read the rest of it. But
or listen to
it. I trust I'm entertaining enough. Yeah. Or listen to it. I read it. I think I'm funny. I hope you do too.
That's how I read the first book. I'm still have to get the, is this normal? But that's why I read Beyond the Pill was I took your hormone quiz at the beginning, which like let me know which hormones I was, you know, imbalanced in. And I just started implementing small things, and then I would skip chapters, go back to chapters, and then I read it all the way through again because I was obsessed and I kept learning more. So yeah, definitely not needed to read.
That's how I write my books. I'm like, yeah. We all are busy. Yeah. And I don't like to sit down and read a book from front to back. So like, get in and get what you need and get out and come back later.
God, you're just amazing. Like, holy crap. Okay, last question.
Oh, thank you.
Last listener question of the day. How long is too long to be on the pill?
Oh, so it used to be that we were recommended no longer than 10 years. And that was because of like risks of like breast cancer. However, now there is no recommendations. They're like, you can just stay on it through menopause. I think there's better ways to address perimenopause. Perimenopause usually does well to have some progesterone. So this is before you lose your period altogether, before you stop ovulating altogether. And the pill doesn't have progesterone. And like I said, because The pill can be inflammatory for some people. We didn't talk about some people can be slightly insulin resistant. Like these can already be problems in perimenopause. I think there's better ways to do that. And then in terms of the breast cancer risk, there is a breast cancer risk, but it's very mild with the pill. It's a small risk, but it is worth noting your family history and always talking to your provider about. But what you know, the governing bodies say now is the risk is not enough for someone to stop taking the pill. And there is also the benefit of preventing ovarian and endometrial cancer. But I will say for everybody listening, there's lots of ways to do that. Diet and lifestyle have a much bigger impact in preventing cancer than the pill does. So just keep that in mind, because if you are someone who is going to use the pill because you're like, there was ovarian cancer in my family, know that you can amplify that by also doing the diet and lifestyle.
Wow. I just love that. I still feel like you have the knowledge of every single doctor that I've gone to, but yet it's more of like a holistic root approach to like my problem. So like, I really do appreciate you taking the time. I know this was middle of the day and it was an hour long, and we literally are so happy that you were able to hop on our podcast.
We feel so lucky. Like seriously, very totally lucky.
No, this is a great conversation.
Is there anything else you want to leave our audience with? Any last piece of advice, something you wish you could share with all of our listeners?
I think, you know, one of the most important things that I share is that you are the only one living in your body. So you're the only one that knows what's true for you. And if, like, I have a book called Is This Normal? And what I'm trying to help you do is understand what's your normal. Because so often we go to the doctor and they'll say, that's normal. Like, don't worry about it. But that's not normal for you. And that's really all they should care about, is that's not your normal. And so always advocate for yourself. In the book, I actually put so many checklists. I actually was going through it. I just got it, my own copy in the mail, and I was going through it and I was like, man, I wish I put even more checklists and diagrams and stuff. Like, I just wish I just, like, it's so many words. I just could not fit anymore. But the reason why I put all these checklists is so you can pinpoint what might be going on for you. And then you can take that to your doctor and you can say, here's the list of what I'm experiencing. Could it be this? And if they're like, no, that's normal, then you say, well, could it be this? What have you done to rule that in or rule that out? And if they say nothing, well, then they should get on that. But that's usually the language to get them to actually investigate further. If they're like, no, I'm not going to run your labs, you then say, okay, I need you to document that in my chart along with the reason why you're not. And I'm going to go ahead and request my chart notes for my next provider. That'll usually get them moving in the right direction, because they realize, like, well, wait a minute. I there might be something more here. And that's not because they're a bad person or anything like that. It's because in the US healthcare system, they have more patients to see than they have time in a day. And there's got to be like some words that get them to pause and slow down. And again, it's not because your doctor is bad. And it's also not fair that you have to, like, it's on you to bring all that information. But it is the way it is. So I provided you a whole lot of resources to help you be successful in that relationship.
Thank you. Literally, thank you for everything. Where can everybody find you? Because people are going to be want to know. And your book, of course.
My main hub is drbrighton.com, D-R-B-R-I-G-H-T-E-N. Do I know how to spell my own name? drbrighton.com. That's my main hub. Tons of free articles, resources there for you. Everything that couldn't fit into the book, which is a big book, but everything that couldn't fit, we put it there on the website and made it available to you as well. And then you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Dr. Jolene Brighton.
Perfect. Love. I can't wait to read your books. Wow. I'm freaking out.
Yeah. We're going to order like immediately now.
I'm like, oh.
Right now. Thank you, Dr. Jolene. We appreciate your time and we will chat soon, maybe.
I know. I'm like, wait,
maybe we'll be in our DMs.
We might need to do it again.
Yeah. Well, thank you both. This was a great time.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate you.
Okay, listener, straight kind of moment of the week. This is obviously going to be related to menstrual cycles because we thought it was very fitting. So someone wrote in and said, I was seeing this guy. It was kind of a new thing. And we went over to our friends for a night of partying. We were both a little tipsy and laughing and having a great ass time. At one point, my date was chilling on the ground on his back. And I go over to sit on him and tease him a little bit. I'm sitting on his stomach, by the way, As I stand up, I notice a big red stain on his light gray shirt. Avi, from my lady parts, I was menstruating, LOL. I immediately eyed my girlfriend and sneakily pointed at his shirt, which he had yet to notice. My girlfriend immediately grabbed a glass of red wine and drunkenly went over to him and pretended to sloppily trip and spill it all over his shirt, covering my blood stain.
That's a true friend. That's a true friend.
Snap, snaps, claps, claps.
It's
I love
a true
that.
Friend. I really don't think I could like even picture how horrified I'd be to have a period stain on the front of a guy's shirt because I was trying to be flirty.
Yeah, like a new thing too. Would you do that for me if I was like, Sid?
Yeah, I'd be like, oh shoot. Oh, I'm such a klutz. I'm such a klutz.
I would do it for you.
I would do it. I actually would because like nobody wants to experience like a blood stain on somebody's shirt. Like, holy crap. That one's good.
I like that one.
I like that one a lot.
All right, you got another one?
Okay, yeah, this one. I got my period at a young age. I was only 10 years old, so I was not comfortable wearing tampons yet. Our class had a field trip to a water park and I obviously wanted to go. I knew I couldn't wear tampons, so I thought I solved the issue by wearing a pad with my swimsuit with my shorts over it. Everything was going great until I tried the big slide.
Oh, no.
I went down the slide and at the bottom I realized something was missing. I looked back up at the slide and there was a pad trailing behind coming down the waterfall. The worst thing is, you know, at the bottom of the slide, people are waiting for you to come down. They're all like, yay, especially when you're little. So like people are waiting to watch. And I bet half the kids were like, what the hell is that? The teachers were probably like, oh God.
Or your crush coming down the slide after you picks it up. Hey, did you leave?
And they get huge when they get wet. Huge. You could probably use that as a floating device.
Do you sleep with tampons in?
Not really. No, I mean, I honestly, I'd rather commit a period undie.
Like, same. Sorry. Same. You know what I need is period panties.
Oh yeah. You were talking about these, right?
Period panties. Apparently it's like a thing. My sister wears them all the time.
That's who it was.
Yeah. And you just wash them.
Oh,
it's kind of freaky, you know, but like,
it's a little spooky.
Yeah. But like, not as spooky as like putting your menstrual cup in the dishwasher like my sister does.
Do you sleep with underwear on?
I sleep with me undies.
Okay. Well that, okay. Those are like shorts.
Yeah. Those are like undies. Yeah.
Because apparently like best thing for your vaginal health is not wearing underwear and like letting it breathe.
You want them.
So truly since for like a few years, probably more than a few years, I've not slept with undies.
Good.
Yeah. And I'm just
unless you have your period.
Well, yeah.
Yep.
Cause otherwise then it's just too risque.
Yeah. We don't want
I got white sheets. I don't need that.
I hate when you stand up in the morning and just know, you just know you're like gravity. Here we go. And then you're like,
it's just so weird. It's like, it's such a weird concept. You're like, oh, yep. I'm literally hurting on the inside. Okay, it's that time.
I'm bleeding. Wow, periods are crazy.
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as we did because holy crap. I have her book in my Amazon cart. I hadn't read it before and I'm like ready to read it. Like,
if you read it, be prepared to like question your entire existence.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah. I'm like, honestly, I like that. Yeah. I hope you learned. I hope you spread the word to your lady friends. Like, send this off to friends who need to hear this. Like, whatever age it is, we've all got hormonal imbalances and different things, like all the way from pre period to menopause and after. So like, share this with women in your life. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Learn how to optimize your body. Why not? Yeah, you know,
why not?
And what's thanks for listening with an open mind, you guys. We appreciate that. Other than that, you guys, you can follow us at Straight Candid Podcast on YouTube, on Instagram. Give us a follow and subscribe and rate on Spotify. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts. I'm at Candid Soph.
I'm at Candid Sid. And we will see you next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Perfect timing. That was a good, that was enough.
Like period talk, that's all we needed. No, we didn't need any more. Yeah. Yeah, no.